It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. We want you to break through being the bottleneck so you can stop sucking down Pepto-Bismol like it's a strawberry smoothie. So you can take 30 days away from your business. So you can create a company that, wow, could function without you and isn't a total nightmare when you come back. All of those things. So I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. I wanted to share some thoughts with you today about resilience, because honestly, the last few months have been an absolute bear for me. I mean, I've been riding the income roller coaster. A client of mine went out of business. Cash flow's been tight. I've been stuck in production mode with a new program. It's just taken months longer than I thought it would. My dad had a health setback and we had to navigate his being in hospital and then rehab and assisted living and coming home. And then to cap it all off, yay, like icing on the chocolate cake, we've had 3 family deaths in the last 5 weeks. My husband's aunt died, and then about 3 weeks later, another uncle died, and 2 days later, my godmother died. So it feels like, oh God, everything I'm touching is falling apart. You ever have that? It reminds me of this old biblical verse where one of the prophets is talking about the fig tree isn't blossoming, there's no fruit on the vine, the olive crop fails, the fields aren't yielding any food, the flock is cut off, there's no cattle in the stalls. I mean, essentially, it is the picture of a farmer at the end of a dismal season. And yet, and that's what the prophet says, and yet there is hope. So how do you keep that faith? How do you keep moving forward? I mean, some people use prayer and meditation. Others use exercise or accountability groups. I use French fries and chocolate, which doesn't always help. And that's why I'm really eager to talk to our guest today, because she's built and grown her business against extraordinary odds. And I was wondering, how did she stay resilient and keep persevering? I mean, when you hear about her story, it's just mind-blowing. So if you want a recap of her top tips, make sure you're on the list to get our executive summary. Just go to businessexponential.com to sign up if you don't get it already. And if you do, thank you. And now for our guest. I had the pleasure of meeting Sonia Clayton at an Enterprising Women Annual Awards Conference a couple of years ago, where I'm on their board and Sonia was an awardee. Well, she's a firecracker and absolutely a delight to meet in person. She came to this country just over 30 years ago, not speaking English, and with only $50 in her pocket. But what's so amazing about her is not just her strength and skill in building a multi-million dollar company that's contributed millions upon millions to the U.S. economy, but also the way she has been so resilient in dealing with personal and business challenges. And given that times can be really tough, I really wanted to delve into that issue of resilience. How do you keep the faith? How do you keep going on? How do you keep moving when, as a small business owner, it sometimes feels like you're a bloody punching bag for everything else that's going on? I mean, it makes me sound like wah, 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 all the things I was talking about earlier pale in comparison to what she's been through. And that's why I'm eager to dive into her story. And I'm delighted to have her here on Business Breakthrough. Sonia, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Nina. It's very nice to be with you today.
Where you have such a wonderful story. And we first met at the Enterprising Women Annual Awards Conference. And, you know, when I look at your bio and your history and how you started, you started your company in 2001, and it was almost like a 1-2 punch. Not that I know much about boxing, but that 1-2 punch of you're in Texas, you've got Tropical Storm Allison, and then 3 months later, the terrorist attacks of 9/11. What on earth helped your business survive that first year?
You know, Nina, those are the kind of things that I am amazed at myself. I realized that 2001, 15 years ago, we were going through a really rough patch, especially after 9/11. And the reality of it is I was pushed into doing this in a way because my employees have lost their jobs as a result of the 9/11 attack. And I had had this team for a long time, and I just felt obligated. I felt like the mother of the family here, and I felt obligated to do something for them. I had had them for such a long time. They have followed my career from the airline industry into the IT industry, and we were good friends. And I just simply had the feeling that nobody could help them except for myself. And so they kept on showing up at my house and telling me, come on, Sonia, let's create something. You're a great leader. You've been a good boss to us. We want to work for you. Let's just do something. And so we got together and created VIP. And it was a crazy thing, leap of faith, if anything, because as you just mentioned, the economy was going through different challenges. And not only we were being faced with different threats, but we had been attacking American soil, and the weather wasn't helping, and the dollar was not too strong outside the United States. So we were having a lot of challenges that year. And what got me going was probably the enthusiasm of my former employees and their faith, them believing that I could do something for them. And then I think that's what gave me the fuel to say, okay, maybe I can do something for them. The starting wasn't an easy feast, but it took a lot of faith and a lot of hard work.
Absolutely. So it sounds like you had the built-in leadership there because you had worked with this team before, but we're also feeding off of their enthusiasm as well, which is really wonderful. And in your experience, because now here we are 15 years later, in your experience, where do you think that stamina to run the entrepreneurial race comes from? Because we were talking just before we started the show about a lot of the issues in the economy. A number of businesses are closing down. Government regulation is increasing. What is it that makes business owners resilient, or what can they look to help get that resilience and stay the course?
Nina, I think that sometimes we are so focused on our final destination that we don't see what's on the way. And for me, my greatest blessing is actually finding these individuals, these cheerleaders, the goodness of our friends, the goodness and the kindness of our relatives, the goodness of our neighbors or peers such as yourself right now, give me an opportunity to come into your podcast. The faith that those individuals have in us, I think that's what keeps me going. I keep a very thankful heart for all those things because, as I mentioned before, sometimes we just have this big, huge goal and we're chasing that sun, but we forget what's on the way. And it's what is on the way. It's what gives you the legs to walk and reach that sun. And in my case, it was, the enthusiasm, the faith that I knew that this individual had on me. And that's still what keeps me going today. It's very hard to maintain a business under the current conditions, as you just indicated. The government, has made the life of the small business owner impossible. Totally impossible. There's so many regulations. They just raised the minimum wage. Yeah, it's a good thing for some people, but, for a small business, what does it mean? It means that, my clerks are no longer going to be paid the same kind of money that I was paying. It means that I may just have to simply reduce their hours and keep them part-time or split shifts. So is that really improving the life of this employee? No. And they just simply have to make him contractors, So whatever was good now is worse. And they think that they have done a tremendously good thing. But the reality of it is a small business cannot sustain and survive with all these regulations and all these mandates. Makes it difficult, right?
Right.
Our profits are not huge. We are a small business. And that the word says it itself. We're not making huge profits. But we're surviving and we're sustaining the economy of the United States. And we give jobs, we find jobs, we keep people busy. And I think this is a great, good thing to do. But it's just making it very hard for us.
It is hard, and especially when you are coming from a place of wanting to help instill pride and usefulness and just a sense of belonging in the people that you're working for.
Absolutely. And They've been with me 3 years. VIP is not a company that fires people. We keep our people. We treasure our employees. They like to be here because we have a whole different method of leadership here. We're very unique, and I think part of the growth of the company and the significance of the company is based on the fact that we do philanthropic work along with our day-to-day work. We believe in doing good. We believe in being good people. We believe in giving back. We believe in reaching out and helping out another individual who is out there in the job market. Or we believe in helping a soldier or helping a student who's simply struggling to make his grades and get his college degree. I come from extreme poverty, and it was education what brought me out of the hole. It was knowledge and education that, you know, got me to where I am today. So I truly believe and endorse the cause of education. But also, when I was a little child, I was living in Colombia, saw a lot of violence. I was born, unfortunately, during probably the most tragic time of Colombian violence. And seeing the military personnel being there and giving not just to their community but in their country, but giving to another podunk country down there in South America. And all those experiences instilled in me a desire to serve and give back, and not only do that, but lead and teach my people, my employees, to do the same thing.
Yeah, and that, it looks like that kind of becomes that circle of faith and giving where you have others help reinforce that in you, and in turn, you give back and find ways to give to the community and to your employees as well.
Right. But you know, the reality of it, Nina, all those causes and all that giving is as good as the prosperity of your business. When your business starts going down, there is no giving, there is no prosperity, there is no sharing, because guess what? Don't Fuzz It has been shut down, you know, and that's what's happening to many small businesses today. Every time we lose a small business, you know, it's a tragedy, because a small business could have produced some good for America.
Absolutely. So let me shift to a different kind of challenge or possible challenge where you also showed incredible resilience and fortitude, and that's in forming VIP Global. You went into not just a male-dominated field of IT, but your focus is on very much in the oil and gas clients. That seems like an unusual place for a woman. So can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, why you, why there, and how do you make that work? I mean, were there obstacles that you came up against, or?
Yeah, it was a big challenge. And when I started, I had in mind that I was going to pretty much serve a big company. I was always a big time dreamer, but I also believe that not only I had the capability to dream, but also to execute. And what is the type of business that was just going to serve the oil and gas industry? And everybody told me that's just rough. Oil and gas are very tough fields, and IT is very a tough field. And so, you know, all these things came across my mind, but I was never intimidated by it. And as I started working in the field, I did realize how difficult it was. And it was very, very, very challenging to not only penetrate the IT information systems field and ERP systems technology, which I do. The ERP system technologies like SAP, Oracle, those are the largest enterprises in the world. But not just going there alone was difficult, but just actually facing this very redneck, typical, tough oil and gas decision-making leaders, they were very hard to deal with. I would walk in their offices, and sometimes I would see, you know, a table of 20 men looking at me, and I could tell that they were saying, okay, you little girl, where are you coming from? Why are you coming here, and what are you trying to teach us? Are you going to show us how to produce oil in a better way, or is your company going to tell us how to run a system when we have been producing oil for the last 100 years in our own way? So that was very, very challenging. How did I do it? It took a lot of faith. It took a lot of determination. Every day I will basically put myself an armor of faith and say, I can do this. But it was very intimidating. There is no doubt it was.
Well, it also sounds like from what I've read of your bio, as a child, you were a leader of a little gang of boys, including your brother Juan, and were a bit of a rabble-rouser in your young days. So,
right. You know, and I think everything started there. You know, once I was in a television interview, and the interviewer asked me, Sonia, if you had to live your life again, would you leave it again? And I said, no, I would shoot myself because I did not like my childhood. It was very challenging. It was very lonely. It was very rough. It was very poor. But I will never, ever downplay the role that that whole childhood experience played in my life. It taught me that I could do things alone. It taught me that as a little girl and as a woman, I had to brace myself, protect myself, help myself, lead myself, because I had no father. And as a child, I missed my father terribly. My father walked away with another woman when I was 18 months old and abandoned my mom. And it was very hard for me. I think little girls tend to have a special bond with their father. And I didn't have that. And I missed it terribly. But at the same time, being by myself and realizing that I was alone, that I had no plan B because I had no father to catch me on the fall, made me who I am. Made me a very determined girl, a very determined individual that was not going to be afraid of facing 20 boys in an oil and gas conference room. And pretty much that's what I look at when I, you know, when I was afraid or when I was intimidated, those memories will come to me and I will say, you know what? You were growing up in a violent Colombia in the 1960s. You were alone. You defended yourself very well. You were a little girl. Now you're a woman. You can do this.
But it also sounds like that, you know, there's no plan B. We're going to make this one work is something that you also brought to the founding of your business, that single-minded determination, which is very inspiring. So, Sonia, you mentioned something really interesting in terms of being by yourself and having to fend for yourself and so many things you learned as a young woman. But as you've also expressed in building and growing your business, you can't do it all by yourself. So what have you created within your business to give you that support and also to help the business grow so it's not dependent on you alone?
Very good question, Nina. The reality of it is you cannot do everything by yourself. That is something that you have to learn as a young entrepreneur or early in the process of becoming an entrepreneur, because there is so much that you have to handle that you have to rely in the competency and the capability of those that you are surrounded by. And sometimes, because you're the leader, you have very high expectations, and the reality of it is some people don't think like you do. Some people cannot match your abilities because you are a leader, because you have something special. You can see things in a different way. It may be multitask. It may be work 20-hour days. But the reality of it is the people that you're surrounded by, they may not be the individual that will work 20 hours a day. But they have other virtues and talents and abilities that you have to learn to identify what they are good at and then use those talents and basically make a distribution of that intellectual wealth and know how to play each and every individual in different circumstances and in particular in the decision-making process. You have to say, okay, you know, John Doe is good for cold calling, or Jane Doe, it may be good for management of resumes and applications and human resources activities. So you have to rely on the talents of the people that you work with, and you have to trust them.
Hmm. And to touch on perhaps a very personal subject, but also one that is related, you have a team, you want to trust them. And I love that phrase, distributing the intellectual wealth. You had a very serious health challenge a number of years ago. How did that come into play when you were dealing with that?
Yes, that was in 2006. And at that point, I was going through tremendous turmoil. my life was very, very challenging. I had a son who was giving me a hard time. I had my daughter in high school. I had church responsibilities. I had family responsibilities. I had an elderly parent in my house. I had the responsibility of the business alone was huge. My husband was working and pretty much living in New York in those days because that was just kind of like where his job was. And so to make a long story short, yeah, it was very difficult, but I was able to manage through the whole process. I will tell you this much. I was working at my desk the next day after my breast cancer surgery. I was there.
Wow.
With a lot of drugs and a lot of pain, I was there. And that's the kind of individual that I am. But at the same time, I had the sympathy, I had the compassion of my employees, and they stood by me. They, you know, were there. My husband came and helped me out with the business from that point on, and he got involved. So I had to rely on other individuals' talents as well. And that's how the company survived. Amazingly enough, that was one of my very best years in the company. The company grew up very fast. We were sending individuals and employees all over the world. We were in Hungary. We were working in Spain. We went international that year. It was pretty big for us. We received a lot of awards that very same year as well.
Wow.
That's where the fame of VIP started at that point. In 2006, 3 years after we had started. And I was amazed, you know, sometimes life has a way to compensate. And that's another thing that sometimes we don't see. We see the challenge, we see the problem, but we seldom stop and look at the blessings that are going along with your challenges. And I took the time to ponder and be grateful about the blessings that we were receiving at that time. One day, I went to the hospital, and they had given me a blood transfusion because the treatment that I was in was pretty much eating my blood plates, and I was very weak, and so I couldn't even get out of bed. I started getting really cold, and I had to remain in bed, and, you know, in the middle of a Houston summer, I was wrapped up in blankets and with my fireplace on. This is how sick I was. And so I went to the hospital and the doctor said, yeah, you know, pretty much your blood count is pretty down and your plates are down and we need to give you a transfusion. So they gave me a transfusion. I was very depressed that day. And I got out of the hospital and amazingly enough, it was this huge billboard with my face on it.
Really?
Yes. And I looked at it. It was just right in the corner of the hospital. I had won the Emerging 7 Award or something like that. It was one of my very first awards. And I didn't even know. I had become a Houston fast-growing company and all these things. And to my amazement and surprise, I get out of the hospital and I see this billboard. It's the Houston Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, so Luz Sonia Clayton. And I was named the Hispanic Female Entrepreneur of the Year. I had no clue. And it was done by the employees. They had actually submitted my name. They had presented my case. They had told the media and the chamber the story. And I guess they shot the heck out of me. They made sure that billboard was out of the hospital where I was going, and I come out, and there I am.
That's amazing. And I think what's also amazing is you're talking about cancer and a blood transfusion, and you say, I was depressed that day. I mean, I would have been depressed for like a month or, you know, at least half a year. But
yeah,
that
was...
day.
No, I only get depressed by hours or days, but I don't really, you know, linger on those kind of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of it is life is tough, and life is a total inconsistency. But it also, life is a temporary situation. So if you're, you know, living happy and well today, that's temporary. That's going to go away. But also, if you're at the bottom of the cycle, if you are having cancer, fighting cancer, going through a divorce, being depressed and sad about something, guess what? That's not going to last. It's also temporary. That's going to go away. And that's how I learned to look at life ever since I was a child. I would say that to myself. Life is only a temporary situation. What is happening today and right now is not going to be happening tomorrow. And it's either going to get worse or it's going to get better, but it's a constant cycle, and we have to understand that.
Mm. You know, it's like the wonderful story about King Solomon, who was looking for a ring that would have a saying that could apply to all situations, and eventually the jeweler he chose had the saying, "This too shall pass," so that he could be reminded when his wealth was flowing in, "This too shall pass." But when things were tight, "This too shall pass."
It's funny that you say that. I was just in Israel a couple of weeks ago, and I heard that story over there, and I just loved it.
Wonderful. You know, and it's also wonderful to hear how your team stepped up to the plate in ways that didn't require your micromanagement or your direction, but they took upon themselves to submit you for this award and probably to do many other things within the business because they understood it well and they had been trained well.
Correct. And I always pay a lot of honor to my team because they are wonderful people. They've been with me for a long time. We know each other very well, but there is trust and there is support and there is encouragement, and we have been through peaks and valleys together, and we know we can do this, so there's faith among us.
Mm-hmm. And what have you found to be the biggest challenge in managing the team, both of employees and also independent consultants?
The biggest challenge is people itself. Individuals that come from different walks of life that we don't know very well, they tend to give the most problems. And the reason is because a lot of them are people that we contact through a phone interview or through Monster or LinkedIn, and we don't know who they are. They put together a very good resume, but, you know, when you start digging, you realize that, okay, this individual was terminated for poor performance, or sometimes they, you know, even disguise that, and you don't go as far as determining or finding out until it's too late and you got this person in a project or in a contract or at a client site, and they're making you look really, really, really bad. So that is probably the most challenging part, because you work very hard to find the business, to establish the business, to close the deal, and to bring in a team. And when you bring the team is when sometimes we have the biggest challenges, because we don't have people with work ethic. It's amazing how many individuals just go to work just to go to work, but they don't have work ethic.
Hmm.
And especially the new generation seems to be a little lazy.
Well, is there a way that you can pre-screen or pre-test for that? I know there's a wonderful saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. So are there ways that you've found to vet that trait of not stepping up to the plate a little better?
We do. We have different kinds of testing when individuals get put through the process of hiring. We have several lines of interviewing. We have the actual self-disclosure. But the reality, as I say, some people can be very astute, and you can be misguided. You can be, misled as an employer. And some of them have brought, even brilliant, nice written references. And you go, oh, this is impressive. But then you realize they have a number of, different employment work practices that you cannot see the individual until you have that person in the project for maybe 15 days, 30 days. Then you start saying, okay, there are some issues here. Mm-hmm. Not all of them are like that, but we have run into a few that have been pretty disappointing to us. And some of them have actually destroyed accounts, because they were no good, and the client gets upset and says, okay, no, that's not good.
Wow. And how have you bounced back from that? It's certainly a frightening thing for business owners when you start to trust your team, whether employees or contractors, to step in and do the work and represent your company. And then, they fall down on the job.
It's very hard to recover from that. We have recovered one account that was in that situation. But it is hard to recover from a situation like that. Once a customer is faced with so many vendors knocking that door every day, telling them, you let me in, let me in, let me in. And so you are in and you blow that opportunity, then it's just not good.
and then they move quickly to another vendor and the relationship does not recover very easily. So it is hard, and I'm very cautious about who I send to my key accounts because of that very same situation.
Wow. And as we wrap, when we're talking to small business owners and on the subject of resilience, are there some lessons you think that small businesses can learn from the best practices of the large corporations you've been used to dealing with, the Fortune 100s?
Well, yes, there are several pieces of advice or nuggets that I will share with you. There are do's and there are don'ts. And I always tell people, learn your do's and learn your don'ts. And, you know, the do's is, you know, define your product, define your service, define your niche, and be good at what you do. And be a real a problem solver. Don't you just be a problem. Sometimes I have gone to customers that tell me, you know, this last vendor I had was a problem, not a problem solver. Be competitive in pricing, you know, but also don't be the cheapest guy in the process. Amazingly enough, one day I was very frustrated being for Hewlett Packard, and I got surprised that I will never be selected for anything. And so decided to go talk to the procurement people, and they told me, you know what your problem is? You're always the cheapest bidder. I up until that point, I thought that was a good thing. And they told me, no, we never select the cheapest bidder. So you're either in the middle or never too high. So learn your market. Figure it out. What is the best way to bid for a company? There are companies that by culture will select a cheaper bidder, but the big companies that have a deep pocket, for some reason they want to spend the money. And it's just like the rich fancy ladies that want to use a Louis Vuitton purse versus a no-name purse, right? These guys want to carry the Louis Vuitton purse, I guess. And also, you know, be wise with money. When money starts coming into the business, it looks like just cash is, you know, falling from the sky. But the reality of it is, you know, it will go away if you don't know how to use it. If you don't know how to reinvest it or self-invest it, money will disappear. And then, you know, keep motivated, happy employees, gain their trust, share with them, be at their level. Never pretend that you are just better than they are. And that's, you know, a way to gain trust and confidence from your employees. You know, another piece of advice is create a strong network of customers, obviously, and partners that will help you grow. But choosing a partner can be very difficult because everybody is in for themselves. You know, they're all, everybody's looking out for self. And then you go in with a partner and all of a sudden that partner tends to erase you from the map. Then you stay away from those kind of partners. But there are partners that are really, really good and will help you grow your business. The other thing is keep your sales pitch concise, understandable, simple, and quick so you can deliver your sales pitch to, you know, the right individuals rather fast. And then during meetings, give specific answers, bring examples of what you do, comparative tables of why you are maybe more affordable than another individual or another vendor. Be compelling, be passionate about what you do. People see your passion. They read that you believe in what you're selling and that you are passionate about what you do. And that is a huge plus. I'll say keep customers satisfied. We're talking about, you know, satisfied and unsatisfied customers. Mm-hmm. Keep them happy. Keep them happy because they keep on talking and they talk among themselves and they recommend people. I remember I was working at a waste management corporation here in Houston, Texas, a great customer, great, great customer. And they are very good at hiring minority businesses and helping small businesses grow. And I remember I had gone to visit with them, gave them a presentation. They hired my services, and I've been working for them for about a year and a half. And one day I was in Hungary, and I got a phone call. And it was City of Houston calling me. And they said, you know, we have a recommendation from Waste Management. And they told us that you're very good about SAP training and documentation and project management. And guess what? We need those services here. And so I was basically referred by Waste Management into the City of Houston. And those two accounts were gold for me. They were wonderful accounts. They helped me grow a lot. And the reality of it is I got referred from one account to another, two decision makers talking and deciding this group is good to work with, go with her. So that's the best reference. That's your best marketing material right there. It's just a satisfied customer.
Absolutely.
And then I tell my employees, if you receive, you got to be ready to give. I believe in the principle of tithing. I pay tithing in my church, but I believe that we should pay tithing of what we do as well. In some way, we should be giving to people. And so I encourage them to share their knowledge with people that are unemployed. We have three nonprofit organizations. And for every hour work here in VIP, we donate to those three nonprofits. One is the VIP Education Foundation, the VIP Angels for Soldiers, and the VIP Cancer Foundation. And those three foundations receive some kind of benefit annually for the obviously everything depends on the profitability of the company. So in a bad year, they don't do too well, but in a good year, they do very well.
Sure.
And they are actually sponsored and supported by the employees. Every year we select a chairman for each particular board, or I am the chairman, but then they become the co-chairs. But the co-chairs pretty much are the chairs. They do everything. They plan activities. They plan fundraising. They plan events where they can go and donate and present gifts or toys for the soldiers or dinners for the cancer patients or flights for cancer patients trying to come into Houston for treatment. All those things happen because of the goodwill of my employees who are willing and have been taught and are inspected to give back to the community, and that's how they give back.
And that's amazing. And it's a wonderful way to bring us back full circle in terms of how do you stay resilient. And one of the first things you mentioned was having the enthusiasm of your employees and the people that you're working with to buoy your hopes and your faith when you might be feeling a little low, and for you to be there for them when they're feeling
correct.
The same. So Sonia, it has been a journey, and there's so much more that we could cover. But thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation, Nina.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember, go over to businessexponential.com right now and download our 10 steps to a $1 million business. We lay it out for you step by step, the 10 building blocks that'll have you building and growing your business so it's not so dependent on you. Won't that be a relief? Of course it will. So do it right this minute so you don't forget. You'll see it there on top of the homepage. Go to businessexponential.com.